and welcome to the KMXT Weekly Wrap, where we go over this week's news from Alaska's Emerald Isle. I'm your host, Davis Hovey. On this week's recap, three tribal entities on Kodiak Island are jointly proposing to build a cultural center off the Chiniak Highway.
The Kodiakwik Center is not going to be a business. It's not a resort. It is not for commercial tourism.
More about that story later, but first...
Support for KMXT comes from the Kodiak Area Native Association's Substance Use Treatment Team. Talk with your kids about drugs and tobacco. No matter how young children are, talking with them is one of the best things you can do to keep them drug and tobacco free. Learn more at KodiakHealthcare.org or 907-486-7380.
After years of delays, the build contract to replace the Alaska Marine Highway System's ferry Tustamina is out to bid. The state's project notice calls for the new mainliner ferry to be completed by the beginning of 2029, with an estimated price tag of more than $300 million. The new ferry will be a more efficient hybrid electric vessel with capacity for 250 passengers and 58 cars at a time.
Really delightful even just to talk about. You can probably hear the smile on my face.
State Representative Louise Stutes, a Republican from Kodiak, is a longtime advocate of the Alaska ferry system, especially the more than 60-year-old Tustamina, which regularly sails from Homer to Kodiak Island communities. She commended Craig Tornga, the head of the state ferry system, for getting the Tustamina replacement project to this point.
And there are several shipyards that are interested in it, as opposed to the first time it went out, where no shipyards were interested.
Governor Mike Dunleavy first announced the project in 2021. The build contract went out to bid in 2022, and no bids came in.
So they kind of had to reassess it, redesign a few things, and we're good to go.
Tornga went back to the drawing board on the ferry's design and overhauled the contract. Tornga has previously said that one of the hurdles that delayed the project so long was a requirement that 70% of the money spent on the Tustamina replacement has to go to American companies. Bidding closes on May 28th, according to the state's public notice for the project. These next two stories come from our colleagues at KUCB and Alaska Public Media. Salmon bycatch has been a flashpoint for years. Now the group that oversees Alaska's federal fishing grounds is finally expected to make a decision regarding chum bycatch in the trawl fishery at the North Pacific Fishery Management Council's upcoming February meeting. KUCB's Theo Greenlee reports that un-Alaska leaders worried that the decision could threaten the pollock industry that underpins their local economy.
The Unalaska City Council took up the issue of salmon bycatch at its two January meetings, ultimately agreeing to support industry-run bycatch avoidance programs. City Fisheries consultant Frank Kelty warned council members that proposed limits could have major consequences for the community.
This is one of the most important items in the last few years.
Regulators are weighing whether to impose stricter limits on chum salmon bycatch in the pollock fishery. The decision will be made next month by the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which oversees federal fisheries in the Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands. Kelty told council members that the pollock bee season, which accounts for about 60% of the annual pollock harvest, is particularly at risk. He pointed to one proposal that would cap incidental catch of chum at 100,000 fish. Kelty said under that scenario, the pollock bee season would have shut down early in 11 of the past 12 years. That, he said, would ripple through Unalaska's economy, affecting processors, harvesters, city revenues, and support businesses.
As you know, the politics of bycatch have been front and center in the state for many years.
Trawl boats use large nets to scoop up a specific species of fish, but they often catch other types of fish called bycatch. It's been a hot-button issue for decades and taken on new urgency as salmon returns to western Alaska rivers have collapsed in recent years. Runs on the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers have reached crisis levels, forcing repeated closures of subsistence fisheries that native communities depend on for food. At the same time, the Bering Sea pollock fleet continues to catch, and often discard, chum salmon as bycatch. In some years, the fleet has caught more chum salmon than subsistence users along the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers are allowed to harvest, fueling anger and frustration. But genetic testing indicates that only a portion of chum salmon caught as bycatch originates from those western Alaska rivers, while most comes from hatchery fish from Asia or stocks from outside the region, including the Gulf of Alaska and Pacific Northwest. Still, communities in western Alaska have argued that controlling bycatch is the simplest fix for a complex problem. Kelty says it's important to have Unalaska's interests represented at the fishery meeting, where a large number of interest groups are expected to testify.
We're going to have a large amount of testimony at the North Pacific Council from many groups in western Alaska that would like to see strict alternatives placed on the pollock fishery, and I'm very concerned about that.
Caitlin Yeager is the executive director of the At-Sea Processors Association, an industry group that represents the catcher-processor fleet in the Bering Sea. She told Unalaska City Council members that the fleet is already making strides to reduce bycatch in areas where western Alaska chum bycatch is likely, and that hard caps on trawlers would be disastrous for processing communities like Unalaska.
And that means that vessels are tied up at the dock, our processing lines are empty, you have fewer deliveries, and this is an echoing shockwave throughout the community.
Yeager said the At-Sea Processors Association favors targeted tools like time and area closures and real-time genetic testing over hard caps. That's another suite of proposals under consideration by the North Pacific Fishery Management Council.
We need to maintain a degree of flexibility to adapt and continue these improvements without shutting down the fishery and shutting down coastal economies with it.
The Unalaska City Council ultimately passed a resolution that supports bycatch rules that don't shut down the fishery. The city will file its public testimony with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council ahead of the February meeting. Reporting from Portland, Oregon, I'm Theo Greenlee.
Governor Mike Dunleavy introduced a series of bills on Friday and Monday that he says would stabilize the state's finances. Alaska Public Media reports the most prominent pieces of Dunleavy's plan are a statewide sales tax and a new formula for permanent fund dividends. Here's Dunleavy pitching the plan during his State of the State speech on Thursday before the details became public.
I want to stop our fights over the PFE and the permanent fund. And I want to minimize arguments over how much we're going to spend each year and how we're going to control the growth of government.
The governor did not take questions on the plan. His press office declined requests to interview members of his administration and did not respond to questions sent by email yesterday afternoon. The sales tax would be set at 4% from April through September and 2% for the remainder of the year. Dunleavy is pitching the tax as temporary. As written, it would expire in 2034. The new dividend formula would split the state's annual permanent fund drawdown 50-50 between state services and dividends. If the 50-50 formula were in effect this year, next year's PFD would cost the state roughly $2 billion and provide each eligible Alaskan with about $3,200 each. That would require an amendment to the state constitution. Democratic Senator Bill Walkowski of Anchorage says he has reservations about the plan. He says he'd rather the state lean more heavily on the oil industry and outside tech billionaires to raise revenue. But he says Dunleavy's proposal will get serious consideration in the Senate.
I'm glad the governor put something out. I think it's the basis for a discussion. You know, it's hard to pass any of these major bills without the governor actively engaged. And this shows that he's actively engaged.
Walkowski says it's too soon to say if the governor's plans will pass the Senate this year, as it is last year as governor. Daniel Brigman is slated to be the next superintendent of the Kodiak Island Borough School District. The school district's Board of Education announced on January 23rd that they had selected Brigman over the other finalist, Miranda Baca. KMXT reports. On Friday afternoon, the KIBSD school board came out of a special meeting and announced they had selected Daniel Brigman of North Carolina to lead the school district starting July 1st. In a press release from Monday, board president Kerry Irons said of their selection, quote, "The board is confident that Dr. Brigman's extensive leadership experience, commitment to student success, and collaborative approach make him the best choice for the future of our district," end quote. Brigman was one of four finalists for the superintendent job initially announced by the school board earlier this month. One withdrew for personal reasons, and another accepted a job in Cordova, leaving Miranda Baca of Sitka and Brigman. Both Baca and Brigman flew to Kodiak last week for a tour of the school district and to meet with various community stakeholders before participating in a public forum on Thursday night. The next day, the two finalists met individually with the school board for final interviews and executive session. Brigman has more than two decades of experience as a superintendent across several states, but has no Alaska experience, according to his resume. He was most recently the superintendent of Avery County Schools in North Carolina from 2020 to 2024. Brigman abruptly left the position at the end of October 2024 after agreeing to a $300,000 buyout with the local Board of Education, according to reporting from the Avery Journal-Times. The Board of Education did not give an explanation for the separation with Brigman and said it would not disclose any details because it was a personnel matter. KIBSD's school board members told the Kodiak Daily Mirror that Brigman satisfied their concerns regarding his employment history and stood by their decision. According to Irons, as of the airing of this story, Brigman's contract details are still being worked out. And our final story for this week, three tribal entities on Kodiak Island are jointly proposing to build a cultural center off the Chiniac Highway. KMXT reports on the group's recent request to the Planning and Zoning Commission. Lesnoy Incorporated, an Alaska Native Village corporation, is the primary applicant in collaboration with Turniknuk Native Village and Koniag Inc. The three entities are seeking to use a portion of property located around milepost 25 of the Chiniac Highway to build a cultural center, which would be called the Kuduqwik Center. Lesnoy owns roughly 8,700 acres in that area and intends to lease only about 9,000 square feet of that land to the Turniknuk Native Village for the facility long term.
The Kuduqwik Center is not going to be a business. It's not a resort. It is not for commercial tourism.
Gwen Sargent is the executive director and vice president for the Turniknuk Native Village, also known as the Woody Island Tribal Council. She told the Kodiak Island Borough's Planning and Zoning Commission earlier this month that the Turniknuk Native Village will own, operate, and maintain the Kuduqwik Center. Kuduqwik means a place to gather in the Aleutic Sukpiak language.
It's intended primarily for tribal citizens and Lesnoy shareholders for cultural education, intergenerational learning, wellness activities, and stewardship of our land. The Conservation Zoning District allows limited low-impact community and educational use. This project was intentionally designed to meet that intent.
The rub is that the land in question, which looks out over Cowson Bay, is in a Conservation Zoning District. That means it can be used for things like agricultural or commercial fishing activities, but not for businesses or large-scale tourism. So the applicants asked the Planning and Zoning Commission to allow them to treat the proposed cultural center like a church. Churches are permitted in a conservation district, according to Kodiak Island Borough Code. Here's Bronwyn Curry, the assistant planner with the borough's Community Development Department, to explain.
Hours of operation do seem to align with those of other assembly uses, such as a church, which is it's being compared to at this point. Staff believes that the similar use determination be approved, as both the impact and character is similar to that of a church or an assembly use.
Turniknuk Native Village said in its application documents that in the future, the site may have personal use cabins for tribal citizens and Lesnoy shareholders. It would also have small-scale agriculture focused on traditional foods and could host small groups or guided tours for cultural and educational purposes. But Community and Development Department staff said during the January 21st Planning and Zoning meeting that if cabins are going to be built on the property, then those must go through a separate permit application process, and they are not approved at this time. After some back and forth between the Planning and Zoning Commissioners, the Commission voted unanimously on January 21st to approve the request for a similar use determination. But that is just the first step in a multi-step process. Now that the Commission has approved the similar use request, Lesnoy, Turniknuk Native Village, and Koniag must apply for a permit to build the cultural center, which will then have to be approved by the borough's Community Development Department. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Hovey.
KMXT is supported in part by the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center, providing support for victims of domestic and or sexual violence. 907-486-6171.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure to subscribe to us on Spotify. Our staff put together KMXT stories every week to help you keep up to date on the archipelago's latest news. And that's it for this week's edition of the KMXT Weekly Wrap. Again, I'm Davis Hovey. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Thanks for tuning in.